listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good, Gene Johnson. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Well, that was quite the, eye gouging episode, if I've seen one.
Hey, don't steal my pun.
Mind blowing, if you will.
Mind blowing, if you will.
I am so sad right now. I'm so sad. I was crying shamelessly. I can't believe it.
There were tears running down.
I really was crying.
There literally were tears running down her cheeks.
Yeah.
When I'm sad,
really attached.
Yeah. He was my new favorite character. He stole the show.
Haven't you learned anything watching the show? Don't get attached.
Yes.
That's why.
Don't do it.
That's the key lesson. Oh, so we're in a new studio for you guys watching. We're in Studio C.
Hey.
And I believe the iTunes is now working, but our live streaming is still not. So we're still working on the issues, but the podcast should be up now. So we're still working on issues. But joining me today, Kyle Maddock.
Hey, guys. Glad to be back.
And the lovely Kristen Snyder.
Who's very, very, very sad.
She's very sad. And the lovely Sarah Strand is back!
I'm back, too. Hi, guys.
World traveler
and
over here.
We're breaking rules here. Kyle and Sarah in the same day, in the same time. It never happens.
Here we are.
But we got to keep them apart.
That's it. I'm so glad to finally be able to chat with you.
We're, like, finally part of the actual same conversation.
Yes.
I feel like we've been divided for so long.
Well, it has. But we're here now, finally.
For one epic episode. And, guys, I'm Dave Klein. So let's go ahead and jump into the epic episode. So we start off with the North in Molestown, where... Just to start things off in the right mood, we've got an argument between one of the whores in the horror house and Gilly. So
it starts off on this really awesome shot, and it didn't cut away for a good 2 minutes of the whole episode. It is just beautiful tracking shot. It was really cool to start the episode off.
I'm glad that you could focus on the beauty of the shot, because I was focusing on that they were burping songs, and I was like, oh, it's my mother's worst nightmare if I were to burp a song at the dinner table.
There was some slaughtering and raiding.
You just burp music. That's the music.
Just any music.
Oh, yeah. It's like Reigns of Castamere and then Maiden Fair.
All two Baron songs that exist in Westeros.
Yeah, those are the
It's like, it wasn't Reigns of Castamere. Must be the other one.
Must be Baron the Maiden Fair. Yeah, actually, like, they've ended so many episodes now with Reigns of Castamere, if you're keeping track. I don't know the exact number, but a lot of episodes have ended with that track.
See, but to me, this was foreshadowing, because it was the first time they were like, oh, it's the Reigns of Castamere. And she was like, no, it's not. Use your ears. And I was like, is this symbolic?
That's a good point.
Is the Reigns of Castamere actually not happening for once in this series? Like, to me, it was like, hold up. There's a point to this.
No, it's the rape song that's happening. Oh, that's what Baron the Maiden Fair is, by the way.
Why is that?
I'm pretty sure it is, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it is.
So,
okay. I'm pretty sure as well.
The official.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
And they've played it. They played it when they put Brienne into the bear pit into that pit. They've played it on the road, I think with like Locke or something.
Yeah, well, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm fairly certain that that's the actual what the lyrics indicate.
Yeah. Bear in the Maiden Fair. The big moment was when Jaime got his hand off, right? That was the Bear in the Maiden Fair. That was right after that, right?
Was that when I played?
That was the Rock ending.
Either way, somebody's getting screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Anyway. That was the Rock ending. But yeah, so the people who are getting screwed in this time are the people who live in Molestown.
Hey!
They're getting screwed. So we have a Grit and Tormund Giantsbane coming down, riding down, killing peeps left and right, except for Ygritte decides to leave Gilly. And
Ygritte
let her
still
live.
Has a heart, even after her breakup with Snow.
After it was torn off. Torn
Always
apart.
Thank the baby.
Yeah. That's probably more of what it was.
Yeah.
Just get a baby if you're going to toy around in these lands. will protect you.
I don't know how much that's really going to protect you. I think
I don't know. We had the entire slaughter of the babies by
Cersei.
By Cersei, yeah.
Yeah.
Cersei going around slaughtering every Baratheon baby.
Mm. Or was that Joffrey that did that?
Well, it was Joffrey, but it was really through Cersei. Yeah. So, yeah.
So is Gilly the sole survivor of Molestown?
It seems to
and
be.
And her baby Sam.
Oh, sorry, baby yeah, Sam.
Yeah. How about that imagery of the pouring of the blood through the wood?
Mm. That was a great shot with just the her shh, and then she leaves, and then the blood's just dripping from the ceiling.
Also, rains of blood.
Pun master's back. So, Sam,
come on.
Sam is now really depressed after hearing about Molestown. Like, oh, what have I done?
What do you think, Sam? Come on. This is the whole problem with him bringing Gilly to Molestown in the first place. Why would she ever be safer in Molestown than at the wall with soldiers?
Yeah. He meant well.
Because the wall was
he
the definite target.
He did suffer a mutiny. I think that there can be some doubt.
I think what it is
in the brothers.
He knew what was at, you know, the wall, like the guys and what they were capable of.
Horny men.
Exactly. And he didn't know, I guess, what was in Molestown exactly because he didn't spend that much time there. So it's like you're more scared of the unknown. So he felt like maybe that was, I don't know, the better place.
Rather, that is the unknown.
That's you know what I'm saying, though? Like, he didn't know it was there, so I guess he knows that it would be safer. He thought that it would be safer than being in with what he knew was dangerous.
I mean, I guess it's also the wall has a giant target painted on it right now for the wildlings. So he was like, oh, well, this is the target, so let's take her away from the target. But didn't quite work out, as so he kind of thinks at the moment. But Gren's pissed they can't even defend Molestown, and John points out the fact that they are in Molestown means that they're really close to the wall, and it's going to be a great battle of 102 men versus about 100,000.
Yeah.
Woohoo!
Good odds.
Yeah, I'm going to bet on that.
But they have a giant wall, right?
Obviously, I'm betting on their team.
I guess it depends on which side of the wall they're trying to defend.
Mm. I did like how they acknowledged the three men that indeed died during the Craster Keep fight a few episodes ago. They were like 105. Oh, what about these three? 102. I'm glad that they did acknowledge that. It was kind of nice.
Yeah. How many more are they not accounting for?
Well, the men who mutinied, kept those, they're gone.
They're done.
So, let's go ahead and move across the continent to Essos, where we're in Meereen, where Grey Worm is who's staring at Miss Sandy, even though he's supposedly castrated. Seems really interested in her.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how that works. Like Danny was saying, do they still have their pillars and what was
and stones, the locks and stones, or pillars?
Were
and stones?
They all removed? But yeah, I mean, I don't know who we go to, but I feel like they're still going to have those desires despite that. Still, there's still going to be an attraction to the opposite sex.
Absolutely,
I guess it's still nice to look at. So. Well,
it was interesting just from the beginning because I think they gave away a lot with having how she reacted. To his first looking at her, like, she just stood up for, like, a full 2 seconds and then covered herself.
Or was that just for the audience, like, we're going to give you a shot to see her naked, and then she'll cover herself up. Because it's HBO, it's not
and
porn.
We can.
Yeah.
To me, it just gave it away just from the very beginning that she was having some mutual...
It also seemed like she was confused at first, like... Wait, you're looking at me? What?
Yeah, she's probably just as confused as we are. Like, wait a minute, but you can't do anything. What are you looking at for?
Why
but
are you torturing
like, you
yourself?
Can't do anything, so maybe I'll show you something.
Maybe it'll just regrow.
Is this helping or hurting?
I don't know.
Sure. moving on.
I was going to mention, like, phantom sensations, I guess.
Like, phantom
like,
limbs,
people
right?
In war, yeah, people in war like, and whatnot who lose limbs, they
Jamie
feel it.
Gets a lot of phantom sensations for his hand, and it causes him extra pain, so...
Yeah.
I feel like there are other things you could do.
Well, I don't know if... Okay.
I'm going to talk about how I'm
tweet those at us later.
I don't know if he can still get pleasure, but I guess there's still another pleasure area for men. So anyways, let's go ahead and move on to the fact that they end up talking to each other after Daenerys doesn't seem to give a crap about this. They end up talking to each other and basically Grey Worm gives this really nice romantic speech about how he's okay with the fact that he got castrated because it means he got to meet her.
And he apparently went to charm school with Jorah.
How romantic. It's great I got castrated because then I got to meet you.
Yes.
As a castrated person.
I'm so sorry.
Well, he's making the best of a bad situation.
Yeah. No, but I agree. I mean, he clearly is on that train of thought that everything happens for a reason, so let him go that way.
Mm. Yeah, it's keeping him in a positive mood.
Yes.
I embrace it. Although, the end of the conversation, when it turned from, I'm so sorry, to like, all of
I'm
the
not
setting,
sorry. Yeah. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. Hashtag sorry, not
Whoa.
Sorry.
I'm glad you saw me naked. I am too.
There's no one around, but.
Mm. Those are my favorite Goodbye. Conversations. I like when conversations end that way.
Nice.
But I think that she was glad that he saw it only after he apologized for looking. That makes sense.
Is that one of those lady tricks?
You get, it's one of those lady tricks. All the time.
Right. Okay, apologize. I had to apologize yeah. so that we can feel better about
okay.
it.
And then it's okay.
So first you look, and then you apologize. And say, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. You're just so stunning. I couldn't
this
help
is
it.
Not,
she got that.
I'm
got
not
to
saying
look.
That this is okay. That is not the message.
What do you guys think of this relationship? Or this budding relationship?
They're obviously throwing it out there for us to grow with.
God, Kristen.
No pun intended. No pun intended. But I mean, they want us as the audience to go along with this relationship. And yeah, I'm interested. I think everyone is of how this could turn out.
I have such big dreams for this couple. that it doesn't exist.
No fun intended.
How giant are these dreams of yours, Sarah? Please let me know.
Once they were bigger than they were.
Do delve deep into these for me.
Should I wait till predictions?
Yes. I guess so. Okay, but so we also get to this great moment with Barristan and Salmi receiving a letter.
Hmm. Can I back right before we go there? I don't mean to mess up the whole operation here, but when Daenerys was talking to Missandei about mm-hmm. this whole thing. And there's a moment where Missandei's like, I think he was interested. Daenerys sort of has this moment where she's kind of like, uh-oh. And she hasn't had to deal with that before with mm-hmm. an entire army, because she has this entire army of unfeeling
mm-hmm. robots.
Robots. And yeah. all of a sudden now they're starting to get emotions and caring about other people. Mm-hmm. And you can see a flash of like, oh,
worry.
No. Mm-hmm. Like, what yeah. is going on here?
Oh, see, I interpreted it so differently.
How did you see it?
Well, like, maybe because in my mind, the Unsullied have always had some sort of feeling, at least for Daenerys. Like, they've always flocked to her. Like, they're the only one that they have this loyalty, this emotion to. And for me, it was like, she's starting to see other people fall in love instead of just with her. Mm. I didn't take it as jealousy, but I took it as, like, the last time she had a servant fall in love, she betrayed her and ended up dead in a vault.
Mm.
So I think it's just adding complications, and I think it was a shock and something that she wasn't expecting. But I took it more as a more personal level, more like, these are my closest allies kind of falling for each other, and what's that going to do to the missions we have, versus as a reflection on the entire army. But I don't know. It could totally be either one.
Yeah, I think it's both.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. Those army of robots are pretty good to have, though. So we get Barristan Selmy receiving the letter from the Lannisters about King's Landing. Interesting he got the letter, but it's this sealed-off letter from King's Landing about Jorah having basically gotten pardoned from Robert Baratheon for some reason. And Barristan Selmy immediately knows why and goes to confront Jorah about it and then goes to tell Daenerys.
Oof.
What a tattletale. God.
Well, no, he did the man. He went to Jorah first before he went behind his back, and he made
a
point of saying that.
You tattletale! You're a rat!
Well, Barristan's all about honor, and here he is. You have the spy, the ultimate betrayal.
I mean, Jorah had a long time to confess this before it came out this way.
So it does come out this way.
I agree with that. It's so true that, like, if he had been honest with her with the wine situation or somewhere, maybe it would turn out differently. But then again, like, this whole thing, like, left me so sour feeling, because this is, to me, her weakness. The fact that he's been trying to teach her in a way mercy or understanding or empathy, or that everything's not so black and white. And you got that moment of her understanding and of her saying, you changed my mind. And then it flips on a switch and she can't see past. And it's back to that old ways where you wronged one time, goodbye.
Yeah.
At least she didn't kill
That's
him.
That's a really great point.
But she didn't learn anything from what he was trying to advise her, which was that you do have to understand where people are coming from. You have to think, like, how history has lined up, how people have become been put in their situations. Mm-hmm. And she didn't look at the fact that he has saved her or done much. She completely dismissed him, wouldn't even look him in the eye.
I feel like that was just her immediate reaction to being so shocked by that news, because obviously she shares a love for him too. The way he said it to her, that he loved her, like, obviously there's some mutual feelings there, whether it's romantic or more like just a bond that they share of history and traveling together and being there for each other. But it was definitely, I felt she was kind of devastated by this news, and obviously under that madness is sadness, so I feel like she was just completely, like, shocked by this, that someone right next to her had betrayed her at the first.
I mean, when you look at the way she was reacting, she wasn't looking at him in the eye, and then when she actually, there was a moment where she said just leave, and she was looking up and her voice cracked. Mm-hmm. So I think there was that was what it was this thing of, like, she couldn't look him in the eye because she would have been even more depressed if she actually had to look at him. Mm-hmm. Or maybe second guessed herself. But then, yeah, I mean, like, what do you take from Daenerys? Do you think she was too harsh in this situation? Do you think she did the right thing? Do you think there was an in-between?
I think she was merciful in not killing him personally. Jorah almost killed her.
Yeah. This is one of those things you gotta sleep on. Right?
No, this is... Right? If her argument, if she, like, dismissed him with, you have hid this from me for so long, and if you were really on my side, you would have been truthful, mm-hmm. that argument I could understand. But the fact that all she says is, you betrayed me once, that's what she's going with, just bothers me. Mm. To me, it's... I don't see any growth in her. And, like, I love her. So this is, like, tough love.
You know, I feel like if we didn't know that Jorah had done this, if we were in the position of Daenerys and not the audience, all knowing of everything that's happened from the beginning, I feel like we might feel the same as she does right now. Like, get out of here. But because we knew this so long ago, we've kind of gotten over it and grown with him and grown to like him. So I just feel like... we're in an opposite situation of her, but if I mean, understanding.
I guess to me, there's the fact, though, that really she kind of just stopped at the child part, but they've had more, at least it seems like over a year since then together, where he helped lead her through the desert and saved her through that. He helped save her life when they were at the city where Duxos was trying to kill her. Zarazoa and Duxos.
Korth.
And Korth.
Yeah.
But, and helped her with that, and then helped lead her to Marine and helped her with the Slaver's Bay, and has helped her through so many things since then, and helped her live, helped her survive, that there's just been so many things since then that have transpired. And I guess, like, yeah, it's harsh what he did to her before, but he really has changed. And as much as it sucks what he did, I think there's got to be some sort of in between there, outside of, like, well, you betrayed me a couple of years ago, and since then you have literally saved my life, helped me create my army. You're the reason I am where I am today. You're the only reason I'm alive. Mm-hmm. I mean, even beyond, like, after Khal Drogo dies, the only reason she was able to get anywhere and survive was because of him.
Mm-hmm. So where is he going, and will he be back?
Predictions.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I feel like his crimes against her are a lot more severe than we think.
I think so, too. I think it's the whole thing of us knowing so long ago. If we just found this out, we would be much more upset.
Mm, he kind of threatened her child as well, her unborn child, with the words he was giving it to her greatest enemy in the world. And she doesn't know what is going to come out of the secrets that he's already told to Tywin Lannister and King's Landing. They could have men after her. They already had men after her. For the rest of her life, they may know, because Jorah let out a few secrets.
Well, I mean, now she's kind of conquering and taking over the world, so I'm sure a lot of people are seeing her and telling people about her.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But he's been the number one guy giving them the letters, sending the letters to
Paris. He was. And to say, you know what? You did all this, and I'm not going to kill you. Go live your life. Just don't do it here. Mm-hmm. I think that is an acceptable punishment.
I don't think it came out of that, though. I don't think it came out of, like, I'm being merciful and giving you your life. It was just disgust.
Get out of my sight!
Yeah, it wasn't... Like, she even said, she was like, I'm not going to let you die, or basically, in my city. Like, I don't think it came out of a merciful place, a acknowledgement of some sort of relationship plays. It just came out of get out, get out, get out, get out, get out.
Get out.
All right, well, with that,
In my opinion.
We actually do have to cut to a brief message from Maria Menounos for you guys, so we'll be right back in just a moment.
Hey guys, Maria Menounos here, and I want to share my newest book, The Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness, with you. Basically, every woman always stops me and asks me how I lost 40 pounds. So I decided to put it all in one book. Everything I did to lose 40 pounds step by step, and how you can too, is in here. I did it with no time, no money, and no willpower, and now I'm going to show you how to do it too. You can pre-order it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, wherever books are sold, and it's out June 3rd. So I hope you guys love it. I hope it helps you in your weight loss journey, and please, please tweet me and update me on your progress at Maria Menounos. Thanks.
And we have the book right here, The Every Girl's Guide to Diet and Fitness. I know I use it every day. No, but really though, it's got exercise tips for you. It's got healthy eating for you, different recipes for sandwiches. Tuna sandwiches was one of the ones we were looking at earlier.
You're going through the tuna sandwiches.
Honestly, you could use it as a guy, Dave.
No, I mean, you could use it as anyone.
If it's got food in it, I'm all for
it's
it.
It's got great recipes, great workouts.
Just look how pretty the food is.
Honestly, when it comes to exercise and fitness, it's universal. It doesn't matter if you're a girl or a guy. It's just universal advice.
So pick up this book.
Although, actually, that looks really good.
I told whatever's you. On the
food. I don't know what
she's
that
like
is.
She's like hoarding it over here. She won't even show anyone.
Okay,
she's
guys,
like,
we're done with the show. We're going to look at the food. For some black-eyed pea salad.
Oh, all right. Before I get more distracted by the food, let's go ahead and talk about Deanna and Ramsey.
What a great relationship. So much more appealing to talk about.
Oh, my God.
Most appealing. Speaking of relationships. So, Ramsey is putting armor on Theon and making sure that he's still called Reek. And don't worry, you got this, big boy. You're cracking today. It's okay, you can do this.
I just like the silence that settles over the panel as we bring this up. Like, everyone just is like, okay, so we have to talk about
it's them. So uncomfortable, all of it. It's like, you see the way Theon is, the way he looks. It's hard to even watch. And I feel like Ramsay acts like the old Theon did. So in that way, it's kind of like, you know, treat others how you want to be treated, or else it's going to be done on to you. And we're seeing that, but having to watch it week after week is just so hard to watch, because you also know that, like, now that Theon's that messed up, he's never gonna be anything more than that.
He's Reek. I'm Reek.
Have you given up all hope?
I have.
Well, here's a question for you, the viewers, and the panel is, do you guys think that, I mean, after everything with Winterfell, we're all a team. I hate Theon. He can never, nothing's ever going to happen that will make him be better or anything. Do you actually feel bad for him now, or do you still think he deserves everything he's getting?
I don't think anyone deserves this kind of treatment, to be dehumanized and treated like an animal. I don't think anyone deserves that.
Yeah.
apparently other people do on this panel.
I feel like the show brings out a lot of emotions about killings. I've had a lot of people who I'm like, you killed them? What? I've had a lot of people I'm like, please kill them. Please kill them now. Please kill them 3 episodes ago. Because, yes. And this is the first one I'm just like, this would be a mercy. This would be a really a mercy killing. Like, I kind of hope he dies because I feel bad. But I'm not to the point that I hope he gets better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that comes from, like, a lack of potential. It comes from, like, I remember what you did, so I will be okay with a mercy killing. I'm still not sure I'll be okay with him getting better.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I'm in, like, limbo land.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone, I agree, I don't think anyone deserves this type of treatment, but I don't necessarily want him around.
You don't want him to become a hero, do you?
No.
Yeah, no.
I'm scared to admit it, but I'm actually a Theon fan.
I like you're like, oh, Jesus.
I know. I'm sorry.
A big reaction from Kristen.
I can't go into full explanation, but I hope for his redemption. I really do. I really do.
It's that redemption story.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and talk about what happens.
Don't even want to touch that.
No.
10-foot pole. Put it
out. All right. Stay on your side of the table.
That's why you're sitting all the way over there today.
That's right.
So Theon, so they go, Theon goes to Moat Cailin, and the idea is they let him in because he's Theon Greyjoy. And Kenning, the commander, kind of realizes what he is and kind of calls him out, like, what are you, a woman now?
Like, well, that's sort a big, of.
He's like,
or a whipped dog.
Yeah, which is both. He's, or, I won't.
No. Which I took no offense to.
I'm going to go with inhuman. He is now inhuman.
Yeah.
He's, yeah, he kind of is kind of a dog in a lot of ways, though. When I think about him, just obeys his master and that's it. And yeah, so, and that's all he lives for now, but. Yeah, so he ends up actually, as Kenning refuses to bend the knee, another Ironborn kills Kenning. He's like, wait, you mean we get to live if we just go the hell away? All right, that's fine.
Yeah, because they're not in a good place. They're all dying. They're all got diseases and sickness, and they're not doing well.
This isn't their natural place.
And they were doing, now they're doing so much better.
So much better. Well, they didn't know. They were like, you know.
One knew. One knew, and they killed him.
Yeah. But this isn't their natural place, though, really. Is like, as they are Vikings, essentially, what they do is they go raid and they go back to where they were before. They don't stick around and take new lands. They kind of just steal the goods from other lands and go back.
Exactly.
They're not really made. They don't know how to run a land like this or necessarily even have the people.
Yeah. Or adapt.
Or adapt, yeah, because they just don't know.
And they've been there for quite a while. When was when did Theon invade Winterfell? Was that in season two?
My timeline of the years that goes on between each thing, the months, I get so confused.
I haven't seen their calendar, I don't know.
It's tough because sometimes people teleport across Westeros in one episode, and then other times it takes them a whole year to get there.
That's the confusing part. It's like, wait, how did like one scene ago you were in the south of Westeros, and now you're all the way at the top? What's going on?
What is happening?
The north.
I mean, what would be a guess? Theon took around the time Theon took Winterfell was the time these people took Moat Cailin. So that's been like a couple years.
Yeah, I think it's a couple years.
They've been there all on their own with no food, no water, just sort of.
I guess we can give it out to people if you guys know how long it's been. Let us know. I'm so bad at that.
I'm not that concerned about it.
They've been there a long time. They're not doing so hot.
But it will tell us how long Reek's been Reek.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as Ramsay does this and pulls this off, Lord Bolton comes and makes Ramsay not a Snow anymore, but Ramsay Bolton.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow, you're no longer a Snow. So all he ever wanted in life and the torture people more, but add that.
And he promises to uphold the name.
Yeah. You know, as they were.
It's so nice to see good people getting, you know, good things.
Yeah, that's how this world works. Good people succeed is what this show teaches me. I was just kind of thinking, like, as all the knights were, like, going away with their flayed man banner, I'm like, how would you really be proud to display a flayed man as your banner?
They're proud.
My banner is someone flayed.
Well, they're proud to follow the people they're following, so.
I guess they live. You live with the people you're following.
I like that they mentioned, where's Locke? Oh, he's probably dead.
Whatever.
Yeah, we don't know where he is.
But Lord Bolton points out that gives us a perspective on the size of Winterfell, on the size of the North a little bit, and the size of Westeros, that the North is larger than all six kingdoms combined. Mm-hmm. That's how big this area is, and he is currently the war in the North. So that means he's going to be in a lot of power. Maybe he's thinking of things like, well, I got a lot of power with this much land and people if I'm the Warden of the North. So we'll see where that goes.
He's got a lot of power.
Yeah.
And
what you going to do with all that power?
Probably go after the throne like everybody else.
It's a game.
It also puts all of his men the closest to the Wildling.
The Wall.
Besides Castle Black. And I'm like, okay, so maybe if you know, the Wildlings proceed past Castle Black and they encounter the Boltons, I'm like, who am I going to be voting for? Like, rooting for at this point?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, so that battle's happening. Okay, everyone. Yeah.
So did you guys notice anything a little familiar with this particular shot from maybe an episode a long time ago? I don't want to give anything away, just throwing stuff out there.
Which shot are we talking about?
The Boltons.
As they're looking out over.
Riding through the land.
Yeah.
To me, it was what I got out of this, looking at the north and the two horses and side by side, it was Ned Stark, but that was just
well, maybe Rob, mm-hmm. whenever he had all his troops and stuff and surveying the land.
And there was also a line that Ramsay said to Theon a little early in the episode. So
I need a bath.
They gave a few things that kind of that was an interesting little moment. Yeah. So I think
I have to go back and rewatch that.
Yeah. Well. Speaking of other people that we love, who are like our favorite people on the show, let's move over to the Vale. I'm talking about Peter Baelish, another one of our favorites, who's being questioned by Lord Royce. So Lord Royce is sitting him down as Peter has claimed that it was a suicide. So that's how we do it. From Lysa. Lysa committed suicide.
I'm not going to admit it. It was a really good story. I was like, that is a good lie.
Wait, from Peter or from Sansa?
Just the theory, the suicide theory in general, going on that route versus like,
they said she was an odd woman.
Accidentally death. Like, no, she committed suicide. Like, it's like, I would believe it. I would.
But they wouldn't because of how much she loved Robin is why they didn't believe the suicide.
Which makes sense. And we get to see Littlefinger's, for the first time ever, it seems, he doesn't have a plan.
Yeah, he's in real trouble here.
He's like, it's suicide, and then he didn't come up with anything else. It seemed really out of character for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is actually, like, everything in this is really different from what happened in the books, but I won't talk about that, but it just is. So for people from the books, it's so different. But we have a huge moment from Sansa here where Sansa says she's not Elaine, she's not... that, hey, you know what? Peter's not my father. I'm actually Sansa Stark.
Yeah.
Whoa, she actually once.
This is like her episode of becoming a woman, and we got all those female gaze shots, and she finally spoke up, and she admitted who she was. So maybe that's all she needed, is to like find herself and admit who she was. She's been like hiding who she was for so long that I think even she forgot. So it was nice to see her surface this episode.
I think Sophie Turner doubled her entire word count in this episode.
That's a good point. I really think she did.
I would probably agree with that. oh my gosh, so many. I don't know, going back to this episode, I have so many like ill feelings where I'm just like, what is she turning into?
You know,
well, she was like raised in the shadows of Littlefinger at this point. But I really liked how she kind of started her speech out with, I'm sorry, Lord Baelish, I have to tell the truth. Because that also doesn't, it says that whatever he said, it's okay that she's going to move forward with the truth. So it kind of, so they're, because they didn't have time to talk about their stories matching up. So it's important to have that line so that he's kind of forgiven for whatever he said. And now she can go and do whatever she's going to say.
It's also very, very smart.
Exactly.
That was a very smart line.
It seems strange to me that as soon as Littlefinger pushed Lysa out the door, he didn't turn to Sansa and be like, let's come up with a plan.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and that's kind of actually where the books differ a little bit, is because he very much was the coordinator of things, more so than here, where he's kind of just like out of his hands a little more. But yeah, Sansa, the thing I was thinking that was kind of interesting with Sansa in this moment is when you look back at any time Sansa's been up to trial for anything, she has lied every single time that she's been questioned by an authority. You get when she was questioned about the direwolves and the dogs and what happened with Joffrey. She lied in that instance to Robert. She lied about Ned for Cersei. She lied, and now she's lying here. And every time before, this it's turned to a really bad thing that's happened for her from her lying. So it's going to be interesting to see where this lie takes us now that she's also once again lied. She gives a truth but also lies here. So,
do you guys think that she was in the right to go with what she, the man she knows or doesn't know, Littlefinger, or should have she really have confessed here?
As he says, you don't know me.
I think that she's not really living in a world of right and wrong. It's like, as she said, she at this point is just trying to figure out where she can at least control something. And
I mean, she does have a great point, which is that, like, where Peter asks her why she did it, and she's like, well, I don't know what would have happened if they executed you.
She doesn't know who they are.
Because I was your daughter. But here, if I tell the truth, at least, or truth, but I can her truth-ish.
In italics.
At least, like, she can maybe survive. And she, one way she knows that this, she'll probably survive, but the other instance, who knows what will happen.
I think in this episode, she finally became a player of the game.
Oh, absolutely. You see in that scene where Littlefinger comes into her room that she knows she can start controlling him. Mm-hmm. She's like, you want me? All right, well, here's the card I can play. Yeah. Start pulling his strings.
I still think they're going to be, like, fighting for power in that relationship because... When she walked out later as, like, Disney princess.
And
she
Maleficent there?
Maleficent, yeah, exactly. Was. And she eclipsed the sun. That was, like, her moment of becoming a woman.
What you're saying is when you eclipse the sun and you become and really sexy. Dark and evil-looking, that's when you become a woman?
No. Something like that, yes.
I mean, that's what mine looks like. Yeah. I don't know.
We're all kind of lost.
She's scary.
What's going to come of her telling people
evil
where
in
she
that
is?
Moment. Yes. I was like,
very, what have you become? Dark.
Evil and sexy.
I mean, you're a product of your environment, and she's been around it long enough to finally be born into something that she wasn't. So I'm excited. I'm so thrilled that she's not crying and... She's going to be calling some shots in the future.
She did cry. Come on.
All right. Crocodile tears. That was fake tears.
Those are fake crocodile tears.
I don't know. You know what? What do you guys think? Crocodile they don't have tears. To be fake tears because she does have a lot to cry
She
about.
Was telling her story. I'd be crying too.
Exactly. Yeah. Crocodile tears. She knew what she was doing, but it came from a place of sorrow for sure.
No, yeah. I think like the sorrow was real, but the words were not. So it was like she was it's like acting. Wow!
Oh.
Okay, so...
Breaking it down, Actor Studio 101.
Follow Sansa if you want to be a good actor. So anyways, Peter... So we have Peter, though, trying to start doing his plans, kind of manipulating things again by using Robin, basically, and being like, well, hey, let's have Robin start touring the Vale and checking out the
It's about
else.
Time Robin left his nest.
Yeah.
Best moment of the episode.
He was working on that one for a while.
So
couldn't have written it better myself.
He's like, mwah.
So yeah, who knows what his plans are with Robin, but it seems like he has plans with Robin.
That's my question. Right? I'm curious what his plans are with the boy,
with
the Lord of the Vale.
We all know, just like they were saying, Robin's not capable of anything, so it's clearly going to be Littlefinger puppeteering him.
Mm.
So outside of the Vale, we have Arya and the Hound.
Yes.
Just outside the Vale at the area that we just saw.
Yeah.
Finally. So they're having a conversation about Joffrey's death and how Arya seems remiss that she didn't get to be the one to kill him.
She'd kill him with a chicken bone.
She had to.
Yeah.
The chicken bone killer. I would also pay to say that, see that.
Yes, yeah. I would too. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I just love the Hound's line about, like, when Arya's questioning, would you have been able to do the same thing? And he's like, I wasn't the damn wine taster.
Yeah, that was hilarious. That was a great stuff from
the Hound. And we do have a little moment where the Hound does acknowledge the wound that he got in the previous week.
Just a flea bite.
Yeah, but Arya does throw something away right after that, he's walking slower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
and we've seen Vesterous Runes take down other big men in this show.
So,
I think that fire is going to have to play a role pretty soon.
Get the dragons over here.
No fire! No!
Just this little area, please, dragon.
Just this.
So they get to the Vale, and then they find out that, hey, guess what? I brought Arya Stark to the Vale for her aunt. Well, guess what? You know what just happened a couple days ago? Lady Arryn's dead.
I think Arya Stark...
her reaction.
Yeah, her reaction was what the audience reaction was. Yeah.
Exactly.
On top of the shot, the two-shot of the look before of her and the Hound just sitting there, just like... You just expected, like, the full, like, head, like, huh?
Yeah.
Like, everything. Hilarious.
It was great.
Such a good moment.
They've been traveling for so long, and so you have to laugh at it at this point because it's unbelievable.
Yeah, because after everything, because also like right beforehand, they got to the crossing just before, as the Red Wedding was happening.
As it was
like
happening.
Literally moments before, so they're just missing out on everything.
Everything.
So,
they're really just connected to that death thing, you know?
The question is, what's going to happen with her now? Are they going to have recognized that? I mean, I don't know if these guards know that Sansa's there or not. Or if they don't, are they going to turn around? Or are they going to stay? So what's going to happen? Where are they going
to
go?
Will the girls finally get to see each other and reunite? I don't think so.
I don't... who knows? I think it's so up in the air. They've left that window completely open with no hints. Like, I could see the guards being like, you're not related to her. You're laughing about her being dead. I could see them being like, well, guess we have to go somewhere else. I could see them like,
but it's like, where are they going to go from here? So could they possibly team up with Sansa and Littlefinger? I don't know. I don't see them doing that. I don't see them putting the girls together, but it's like, where will they go at this point?
Can I ask a question from the booth? Cause I don't know this actually. I don't remember. What's Arya's relationship with Peter Baelish left off at?
Peter Baelish last saw her in the hands of Tywin, if I'm not mistaken, as
the hand, or
as
the,
when she was pretending to be like his cupbearer.
Yeah, the cupbearer. Yeah.
I just think the last thing Peter wants is for Arya and Sansa to get together because he wants full control of Sansa.
Yeah.
I think...
That's true.
Yeah, Arya living might not be in Peter's best interest.
That's a good point.
Well, I mean, Sansa still is the eldest, though, so... Anyways.
That's true, but...
Yeah, I don't... It's such a weird situation, because word is going to have to get back to Littlefinger that somebody claiming to be Arya Stark.
Exactly.
Right, that is going to get back, definitely.
But it's not the easiest thing to get from the Bloody Gate up to the Eyrie, so they may not even do that. I don't know. It's not like they're just walking into the castle. They have to climb up a mountain to get to the castle.
What leads me to think that they will get in and they will meet is this conversation. Because the fact that we're like, what will happen? What will happen? What's going to go on? This is going to create so many problems. This is going to create so many... That's what they love.
Like problems.
They love to stir the soup and to lead us on crazy adventures. And it's very easy to have them go away and to go back on their travels and have them back on the road.
I can't see them turning around, though. I cannot see that. I cannot see them turning around. But I also cannot see them, the girls, reuniting. So it's difficult.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and move to I think what everyone's thinking about, really... the predictions for next week. No, so Tyrion and King's Landing. So we get to Tyrion hanging out with Jaime, drinking wine, telling this giant story about this beetle killing man who just
their cousin.
Killed beetles.
What was up with this story? What did you guys
Carson,
take from
every
it?
Day? What do you think? What was the connection? I was thinking maybe the connection is supposed to be the mountain because the mountain's just a killer who just kills for no reason.
And Tyrion's the bug.
I got out of it was the story of what was the cousin's name, first of all?
Orson.
So Orson was dropped on his head when he was younger, and then he was simple. And day after day for years, he just continuously killed beetles.
It's a lot of beetles.
And Tyrion...
Where did they all come from?
Tyrion would just watch him like an animal, trying to understand, trying to figure out the reasons. But it's like, I feel like when things happen to people in this life, we often observe, like, why? Why did that happen? What are the reasons? And he wanted to know why he kept killing the bugs. And I feel like there is no answer to death.
I'm going to agree and disagree with you. I agree that maybe there is no exact reason, but I think that the reason they didn't answer the question at the end, or Jaime couldn't respond, was one, because people can't normally understand something that they're experiencing themselves. So I think that this was a metaphor that extended on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in part, it's, you know, everyone had, in some aspect, everyone is a beetle, and in some aspect, everyone is the person smushing the beetle. So, for instance, you have Tyrion is at the point where he's kind of in a beetle position, where people are trying to smush him. But then at the same time, the Lannisters all typically are the people smushing, like, peasants and being at war. And then you have the whole concept of the gods and the gods playing with man. And I think that it's just the fact that they couldn't, to me, it was the fact they couldn't label what the reason was in this strive for hunger, power, and just constant coming of death was that it's because it's just constantly happening in the Game of Thrones.
And it's senseless death. Going. It's senseless deaths that happen again and again and again because they're not one. They're not one united kingdom. It's just senseless that people keep dying. And I think that's why he kept killing beetles. It's senseless.
But it also shows that it can't be stopped. Like, he mentioned that he didn't stop him.
Well, a horse kick to the head. That helps.
The mule. The mule.
Sorry, a mule kick to the head. That helps.
And Orson, we barely knew you.
So, if the king dies, the beetle stops.
I just think, this metaphor is expansive. I think it is really supposed to hit, like, about, like,
multiple.
I mean, it's interesting with the idea of, like, the simple nature of him that, I mean, maybe some things are just that simple, that there's not some deeper meaning to everything. Mm-hmm. It's just, there really is just a simple, there's not like a deeper understanding. It's just a very simple conclusion. But yeah, what did you take away, Kyle?
I don't know, but there were just some really interesting images in it. Like when he talks about like an entire, was it a beach or just the ground was completely covered
in
dead bugs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just, is that all the bodies that have died mm-hmm. in the war, or what is it?
Like, yeah, that could
it's
be.
It's so, I don't know. I feel like I got to watch it 10 more times to come up with something.
Okay, well, when you rewatch it, let me know what you think the fact that he picks up, like, the roly-poly and then lets it free mean. Because that was what was interesting to me.
Well, because
he's
not a killer.
Mm-hmm. But he is part of this world.
Yeah.
And I think that...
But that's not the way he has ever chosen to deal with people. He's never...
Except for the singer. Yeah. But I think for the most part, he really does just try to, like, keep the peace. And that's what he's been trying to do, is stop, like... He plays his cards because everyone just is so angry at everybody all the time. Mm-hmm. And there's all this death around him. And he really is just trying to stop all this, as you said, senseless killing. And just try and, like, make there really be peace in King's Landing. Which they just can't seem to be.
I think it also goes to show how Tyrion's mind works. Because... He talks about his childhood, and even at the war meetings, all he could think about was just guh, 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 and how simple it is, and how he's just doing it for the sake of doing it, and how Tyrion's mind is just so focused on finding a logical reason behind things. And as he's talking to Jaime, it's explaining things just happen because for no reason other than people want to do it, and there's no logic behind it; they just want to do it.
Yeah, well, that's that simple nature. Yeah.
I like the aspect that he mentioned about how the bugs are living and then they're crushed and then they return to dust. And that's kind of why, you know, ashes in the Catholic religion, we get ashes on Ash Wednesday to remind us that we come from dust and dust we shall return. And so I kind of like that as well, as just kind of saying that, like, at the end, we all are one when we return to the earth.
We're all dust in the wind.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
So, yeah, but there are also some great brotherly moments in this scene, too, between them, where they have those common memories where they're kind of laughing about it together. And
it didn't just end in this scene. That's what I liked. Yeah. This kind of camaraderie and them, like, exchanging glances. Like, we got that also during the battle later. Yeah.
Which, speaking of which... It's time. Everyone is watching.
Ding, ding, ding. The best in the West.
I don't even have notes for this part.
Oberyn Wedyn.
I think there are tears on your paper.
There are tear stains on my notepad at this point.
Oberyn's wearing light armor, no helmet.
Thank you.
Round one and only round. KO. Knockout.
Boom.
Oberyn wearing light armor, no helmet, and drinking. Dang. That's the way to prep for a battle.
Yes. Now
okay.
I know.
Just to be clear, though, I was all for it. I believed him. I believed in his confidence the entire time. I didn't have a doubt in my mind he was going to be the champion. He was my champion from day one.
Well, that's what happens.
Champion, my champion.
See, sometimes when you're overly confident and overly prideful, it comes to bite you in the ass.
And you return to dust.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it really is, though, like a take, in a way, it's kind of a pride thing. Like, he really just wanted that answer, and he let his pride get ahead of him, which you just can't. You can't, sometimes you gotta bottle that pride a little bit, but he's a very prideful man and overly confident. So,
like, killing him wasn't just enough. He needed him to admit to all these things.
Right. Even though he knew the answer, he still just needed that answer.
And even though he was skilled enough to have that confidence, like, if he had had silent confidence, he would have won. Completely.
Right.
Like, I think you had every reason to be confident in him, because he was skillful enough to do it.
But, yeah, I think he just got overly prideful in this moment. But, yeah, he's doing all this flair, showing off for the crowd, real crowd pleaser.
A showman.
There you go.
Some showmanship.
There you go. But he had him.
He did.
Yeah. He had him. But if he didn't need the confession, he could have just took his spear and put it through his head.
Of course.
And the game would have been over. But he needed that confession.
Yeah.
He just needed... and his cause was so... It's such a good... I'd say it's such a good cause. It's just so righteous.
Yeah.
Like, this man murdered his sister, raped her, murdered her children.
You raped her! You murdered her! You killed her children!
Here we go. It was a very Inigo Montoya, Princess Bride moment.
Yeah,
like, you murdered her, you killed her children.
Yeah.
Say it.
Yeah, so as he got a lot of good stabs, and like it looked like the final one was in almost like the neck of the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it, like possibly. I thought like he got was, his like, stomach in his gut.
Yeah.
He ducked down his legs, the mountain fell to the ground, and we already had that discussion that all men are equal when you're on your back or whatever. Right. So I'm like, okay, great, foreshadowing, like we're going on path.
There we go.
Amen.
So but yeah, but first he still, like, when he got him on the ground, it looked like he stuck him either in the chest or in the neck.
Yeah,
so
he got him in the chest.
Yeah, so. Like a lot of good, brutal good injuries.
Is this both are dead? Or do you think that maybe...
We're not even there yet.
I mean, I think that's going to really be the question.
Yeah, it is the question.
That's my question. That's what I want to know.
But yeah, so the mountain,
that's
though,
a really good question.
Turns and comes back, because it's the mountain, gouges his eyes out. That's got to be the worst thing ever.
And what he was saying.
Yeah, I did do it. He confesses, at least, so he got the confession.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, yeah, he finally says her name. He's like, Elia Martell, I don't even remember the order, but it's like, I raped her, and then I killed her, or then I killed her children. I don't know. It's just a horrible list of things that he did to her.
But at each part of him doing this, he's crushing Oberyn's, gouging his eyes, crushing his skull. I'm, like, shocked at this moment. Like, I just couldn't believe it. Like, this goes back to the Ned Stark moment, honestly. I couldn't believe that happened. And this is the second time I feel like I've just been, had my heart ripped out of my chest.
That was, like, an especially brutal death, too. And for me, like, I hate anything touching my eyes. I don't think I'd be able to wear contacts. That's how much I hate things touching my eyes.
Salt on his eyes.
I hate it. So to watch, like, someone's eyes getting gouged out like that, I'm just like, no.
No, no.
No, any other way. Just don't do that. Yeah, that's the worst. And crushing eyes open.
Oh, my God. And he's like, he was my new favorite character this season, and I still can't believe this happened. I can't believe we got to see it and watch it, and I don't know how they did that in the special effects. I know at one point that wasn't him laying there, and that wasn't his skull exploding.
No, his skull exploded. It was him. It was the actor.
It was Pedro Pascal. Yeah, Pascal. He's done. That was his final role.
Yeah, like literally his entire skull was crushed.
Well, this is the mountain here. The mountain doesn't kill people nicely. You know?
What I want to know, is it like this in the books?
Yes.
This is exactly the way the fight happens. This is exactly the way the eyes are gouged, the skull is crushed.
The way I remember it, and I'm probably wrong. I get things wrong all the time. But I believe Oberyn had a helmet on. And so the mountain grabs him at the end. He just grabs him, and then he like jams his gauntlet hand into his helmet and just kind of twists it and sort of just mashes up his head inside his
helmet. I do remember he definitely smashed his head open. That definitely happened. Yep. I don't remember.
And was there that moment where you thought Oberyn was the clear winner?
Yeah, absolutely.
There was that moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was like ripped right from it. So.
I think the difference between Oberyn like about to kill the mountain and the end of the chapter is like two sentences.
Yeah.
Like,
So you're like,
yeah. Oh,
yeah. You're just like, Tyrion's going to let, what?
And is that's the end of that book?
I think the end of that chapter is Tyrion throws up.
Yeah, that's not the end of the book, but
when
you
guys read that, what were you thinking?
I was honestly like, I liked Oberyn, but I like him more in the show than in the book. So like sorry. No, the actor's great. I love him in the show. He's fantastic. So I didn't care as much about Oberyn as I did like concern for Tyrion. I was just like, what's going to happen to Tyrion?
Mm.
What's going to happen to Tyrion?
What's going to happen?
So, yeah.
Well, I think it goes to what Sarah was saying. If the mountain dies, which he has to because we can't lose Tyrion, which I also said last week that Oberyn had to win, so I'm 0-1 right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but like, right? The mountain has to die, and then there's not a winner.
It's either the mountain dies, and there's not a winner, and there has to be some, you know, debate about what the gods think, or, you know, we're going
to... You love that.
Or it has to be like, escape route, smuggle out, something.
It really
like,
is...
I just don't believe we can lose Tyrion, so I'm like... Nope. If that happens, I will not be here for a month.
I think the question the ending really presents to this episode is that, like, Cersei looks like, oh, good, like, okay, well, Tyrion's convicted right when the mountain dies. Cersei gives this look of like, yes. Like, she does that teeth thing a lot. Anyway, she gives that look like, yes, he's been convicted, but At the same time, it does look like right after the mountain does it, he falls over, and it's like, it looks like it's a draw, maybe.
Mortally
so that's the question,
wounded.
Is like, what's happened when they're both look, I mean, look, Oberyn's clearly dead, but it seems like the mountain might be. So I mean, it's just the question of like, if it's a draw, how do they handle it, or was it a draw? Is the mountain dead? So like, what exactly is going to happen?
Well, I think exactly that us as the viewers question whether or not the mountain's still alive. Everybody in the audience is thinking the same thing. So mm-hmm. Tywin is absolutely going to stand up and be like, oh yeah, we won. And then get the mountain out of there, dead or alive. You know, as
That's
long as people
point.
Still have the question, Tywin can pretty much make up the answer.
Yeah. By the way, just a brief callback to earlier. I forgot to mention my favorite moment in this episode, other than the fight, which is amazing. But Maester Pycelle's speech. I love this. Maester Pycelle's giving that speech about champions fighting each other and like how what it means. And Tywin just like goes... cuts him off. Yeah, just like in the middle of the speech, he's just like, no.
What
he's,
is
he's
this? The Aussie
thing. This is fantastic.
Did you like when he was like, this,
give him the hook.
Man.
Yeah.
And then he kept on talking. Yeah. It's so
he,
insulting.
He didn't want to like name him as an actual human being.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just love that moment of giving him the cane. Like, him off stage.
I like Jamie's looks through the whole thing. Yeah. He was kind of like, damn, look at this guy fight.
Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wish I had my other hand.
No, I'm like, and actually, like, when that first, like, stab happened, Jamie, to me, I thought he, like, he glanced over, and I thought he was maybe either glancing at Tywin, like that, how about that, father, or he was glancing at Tyrion. And so it was one of the two. I couldn't tell exactly where that gaze was going, but it's still, like, it wasn't, I don't know, could you tell exactly where that first
I didn't know exactly where he was looking. I thought he was giving it to Tyrion
at
the time.
I didn't really focus on where he's looking. I was just more of like, oh, he's happy.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him happy in so long. That's so nice.
Mm. Watching
also,
a good fight.
I don't know.
This is like Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier in the medieval times. That's what type of fight this is.
Do you guys feel bad for Oberyn's lady?
Yeah, she like broke down.
I've got a feeling
it was
about
like,
that one.
Basically, if you imagine...
Because she's nothing without him. Because she's not a highborn lady.
Yeah.
She's just a paramour. She's just some prostitute that he kind of took in.
But, I mean, if you imagine her look, that was Kristen.
Or not prostitute.
It was like
a bastard
same thing.
Child.
Like, Kristen
I
had
felt
the same
exact
reaction.
Same way that she does. I was like, don't leave me in this world!
It was the same reaction.
Oberyn, no!
But I think she has potential. She is a feisty lady, and I think she's smart, and I think that there might be some vengeance there.
I think she's going to go cry a river, like me.
Yeah, the Dornish like vengeance, as Oberyn showed us, right?
Yeah, and they're fierce.
They're fierce.
Revenge. Those are the words of Dorne. Just revenge.
Just that's it. That's all.
That's it.
That's it.
I can't wait.
Your favorite moment, though, wasn't the hot pie wolf bread?
That was like a week ago.
That's what's in my head today. Don't ask.
Plus, that was like Kristen's thing was the hot pie bread.
That's what I'm thinking about.
Oh my gosh. I just feel like this moment, just for television in general, is just so epic. Like, I haven't seen something like this on TV since, like, Breaking Bad.
Or the first season of Game of Thrones, or, you know.
Yeah, but it's just, like, they're... I feel like we're going to be talking about this for a long time.
Or the Red Wedding last
year. I feel like this happens a lot in Game of Thrones.
I guess, but I just feel so affected.
Oh, my gosh.
This is so fresh.
But really, just think about, though, like, every season of Game of Thrones, there's something where you're like, oh, my God.
I still talk about Ned, like, every 2 weeks.
Now, every time one of my friends tells me they started watching Game of Thrones...
it's been forever.
Every time I
still feel it.
Every time I have a new friend start watching Game of Thrones, all I'm thinking is like, yes, you gotta get to episode 9. I can't wait until you get to episode 9. I don't tell them that. I'm just waiting. I'm like, I always check on their progress. So like, so what episode are you at now? Okay, cool. Just tell me I just want to see. I want to see how you like the show.
Funny you should mention that.
Their progress.
I joined.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, a friend who likes it. I'm like, oh, I'll rewatch with you.
Oh, there you go.
That's your reaction.
You're glutton for punishment.
Like,
jeez.
Yeah, and then you have to be like sneaky because you look at something bad's about to happen. You have to be like.
Do you set up the camera? Do you do the reaction videos?
I should.
Yeah, you should.
No, I do like be like, oh, I'm peeking because I don't want to like look at them and give it away that something's going to happen. So I have to be like,
yeah,
what's going on? Mm-hmm. But yeah, stressful. Join in, rewatch.
So let's go ahead and move over to predictions.
And now you're after Buzz TV.
Whoa, crazy lights in the studio. So
I like those epic words that. They were saying that love is the death of duty.
I think I actually said that in previous episodes too. Like, that's been a theme that they've talked mm-hmm. about. But yeah, that's also something with that maybe with Grey Worm we were seeing too earlier, where he's
that's
starting
a really good
love.
Point.
So that's yeah, but we get looks like things are gonna, you know, it's just a it's couple time, things are gonna happen to the wall.
Time to fight, maybe.
Nothing but the wall next episode. Apparently,
it looks like seem it. That way.
It looks like it's gonna be like the Blackwater episode that we had in season two.
Ooh,
it'll be the same type of thing.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm imagining that'll be the case, and that's what they're doing.
I hope so.
So that's where the budget went this season.
Ding, ding.
Yeah.
There you go.
Episode 9 is usually the big one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
But I just...
To me, this battle was going to be the big one. I was excited for this battle. I'm like, it's only episode 8. But there's so many good things to see. Oh,
there's so many good things, to come, too. And I just... I cannot wait to see what happened to the mountain next week.
Yeah.
And what's going to happen to Tyrion.
Well, do you think we're going to see the mountain next week, or are going to have to wait 2 weeks for that?
Yeah, they'll probably make us wait, but they
where's
better not wait a
Stannis
season.
Stannis and where's Melisandre?
Let's see,
they
last,
were going somewhere.
Last time we saw Stannis, he was in Braavos at
the
bank.
They got money. Yeah.
And Melisandre and Selyse were doing
bath time.
Something.
Yeah. They were talking about they were going to travel somewhere. That's all they said.
With Shireen.
Right. They were going to travel somewhere. Shireen needed to be involved, and that's all we know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, so with that, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. So, guys, thank you so much
wait,
for
joining. I had a prediction.
Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry.
I have to tell you about my... Darn
no,
it.
No, no, go.
Favorite.
Do it.
Grey Worm and Melisandre get married. No, not Melisandre. Sandy are going to get married.
They're going to have little Grey Worms.
And they're going to, like, rule one of the, like, places that the Khaleesi has conquered.
They're going to rule,
really
like, Yun Kai?
Yeah,
she's going to be like, oh, I have to go on this trip. You guys. Rule.
Can they have test tube babies?
That's where I'm going. I know. High ambitions for this.
I don't know if they have the
ambition.
Kind of technology.
I know. I believe in them.
Cool.
And they're like...
Maybe if they use magic like they do and they're starting to use... But
they can have shadow babies.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of shadows. Oh, shadow baby.
Shadow baby.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That is K-L-E-I-N.
Hi, guys. I'm Sarah Stratton, and you can find me here or on Anatomy of a Movie.
I'm Kristen Snyder, and you can find me at Cinematic Escape, or you can check out my blog, Cinematic Escape.
And I'm Kyle. You can find me at Mad Canard, like the duck, on Twitter, or at a podcast of Ice and Fire.
All right, and we'll see you guys next week. Later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Overhead!
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.